Hey everyone, so let's talk about folk Catholicism. I know there's been a lot of talk and conversations about folk Catholicism lately, and I've been surprised to find that many of the conversations I'm hearing, they don't give the full picture. They usually start with how the terminology is used today, and they don't really talk about the origin or the evolution of the terminology. So I wanted to fill that gap. I wanted to talk about where that term comes from, how it was being used up until how it is being used now. And when doing that, we kind of uncover a few things. We uncover some traps, honestly, that you can fall in if you're not careful when using the term, and just maybe even some things that might surprise you about what folk Catholicism really is, and honestly, how one could even say Catholicism has always been a folksy religion and a folksy spirituality. I hope you listen to the entire episode because there is a lot of nuance that one needs to have when tackling this topic. So I hope you enjoy and God bless. Peace be with you and with your spirit. Welcome to another episode of St. Anthony's Tongue. So, I am in no way trying to gatekeep anyone's practice with this episode, nor am I going to say that there is a right or a wrong way to practice your own personal spirituality, your own personal relationship with the divine, because it is personal. However, the terms folk Catholic and folk Catholicism, they've been becoming more popular in recent years. And while this term is actually over 40 years old, it's now being used in a pretty new way. And again, that new way is very valid and very beautiful. I'm not saying the old way or the current way is right or wrong, better or worse, but I do think it's proper that we talk about this terminology. Where did this phrase come from? Where did it originate? And how is it being used now versus how it used to be used and still is? I also want to talk about some, I guess, critical thinking or some suggestions on how to approach this topic in a well-rounded manner that paints the terminology in a light that's responsible, and we'll get into that later. So, let's jump right in. What is the origin of the term folk Catholicism? So, folk Catholicism is actually an academic and anthropological umbrella term that is used to describe how certain cultures express their Catholicism, and also how they express their other Catholic beliefs within their cultural umbrella. The first academic use of this term comes from the late 1970s in a research study on Catholicism in the Philippines. It was likely used prior to that, but at least the first popular study was released in the 70s. Similarly, it's used, again, quite often amongst academics and anthropologists to describe any practice that is done by Catholics, but not endorsed by the church. And I think that's where a lot of the confusion comes in. Just because something is not endorsed by the church, it doesn't mean it's necessarily banned or forbidden by the church. In fact, the church actually has always maintained a deep openness and casual nature to private devotion and private revelation. You can write your own prayers, you can do your own rituals, and it's usually fine unless it causes spiritual or physical harm. So using that definition of folk Catholicism, about how cultures display their Catholicism and practices done by Catholics but not endorsed by the church, I want to offer you two examples of folk Catholicism that might surprise you. The first one, confirmation names and confirmation saints are a folk Catholic practice. Nothing in the formal rite of confirmation says that you need to take on a new name or have a saint that sticks by you during the process. In fact, this is actually a controversial folk Catholic practice because many Catholics would say, you're baptized under one name, why are you going to take on a new confirmation name? And many global churches actually don't do confirmation names or confirmation saints. It's purely cultural and it's very popular in the West. But again, this is not in any doctrine, not in any bylaw, it's not in any formal Roman ritual. So the concept of a confirmation name and confirmation saint is a folk Catholic cultural custom, and yet it is very, very popular. The second one is going to surprise you as well. Godparents are folk Catholicism. There is nowhere in the formal rite of baptism or any church doctrine that says someone needs to have godparents. There is a suggestion in the rite that you should have two witnesses. And then there's some early church writings that say you should have a sponsor. Or moreover, it says the importance of having a friend during the process. But this concept of having spiritual parents that will assist in your upbringing, and in some cultures, they'll take care of you if your parents die, that is a totally folk Catholic and cultural practice. So I use those two examples because it's a good example of how widely the academic term is used. Because those things are so common, you wouldn't consider it folksy, but by definition, they are. And I also use those examples, and I'm going to use these next examples, as a way to show, even though these things are folk Catholic and not endorsed by the church, they're still very much done. Here's some less mainstream ones that I've talked about in episodes. The first that comes to mind is St. Joseph's Table. This is done on St. Joseph's feast day, which is in March, and there is usually a big public celebration. This can be done privately at your home, but usually it's a big public celebration. This has its roots in Italy, and currently it's practiced in very American-Italian, Italian-American cities. So New Orleans has a huge St. Joseph's Table celebration, so does New York. So I'm going to talk about the public one. In the public one, you have a giant table that is in the public, usually in some kind of blocked off area. They usually have like a parade, kind of like a fair type vibe. And on the table, there are various things. Of course, there's a big St. Joseph statue. There's all sorts of food, of course. But then you have some other things. You have nails, fava beans, and lemons. Other stuff too, but I'm giving you those three today for sake of this example. If you go and take a fava bean from the table and put it in your wallet, it's a dried fava bean, the lore is your wallet will never be empty. The lemons have a lot. The lemons have a lot of lore, depending on the family, depending on where you immigrated in Italy, depending on if you're in New Orleans or New York, or I think Milwaukee has a good veneration of this too. But some of the common lemon ones are, if you're a single woman and you take a lemon off the table, you're going to find a husband before the next feast day. Or a more common one too is just taking the lemon and using it in cooking will bring good health. And then the nails are the most common though. The nails are usually actually even blessed by a priest. And you take a nail at the end of the feast and you hammer it into the outside of your house and no evil will enter your home. And again, this sounds very witchy, very spooky, very folk magic, but this is done by traditional Catholics. My parish church hosts one of these. Another one that comes to mind is Epiphany chalk, which we talked about in the Three Magi episode. Essentially, a priest will bless chalk for you, and you bring that chalk home, and you write CMB in the year on your door for good luck, or outside of your home. And there's also some variations to that, which I get into in the episode, so I won't get into it now. But again, you know, bless chalk to keep away evil. Very magical, right? Well, churches do it. There's also a lot of folk Catholic customs that are done by many people, including blessing things on certain day. Blessed wine on the feast of St. John will cure certain ailments. Or blessed water on Epiphany, called Epiphany water. It's supposed to be three times as efficacious as holy water if you bless holy water on Epiphany night. And again, very spooky, very folksy, but practiced by Catholics. Burying saint medals in the four corners of your yard. I've heard a priest recommend that during a homily. Putting a blessed palm branch on your doorway during storms is one that's popular in the South, in the hurricane, you know, alley in the Gulf Coast. You'll hear priests recommend that during hurricane season. But again, it's full Catholic, but it's practiced by Catholics. And then a lot with saints that, you know, my podcast talks about, most of the folksy saint practices I talk about are done by, you know, church-going folks. But one in particular that's been on my mind lately is Sleeping Saint Joseph devotion. Sleeping Saint Joseph is a statue where usually it has candle holders within it, but it's or drawers where you can put things in the drawer of the statue. But you light a candle to the Sleeping Saint Joseph and you pray a prayer. A lot of the traditional prayers actually say, "Joseph, I'm coming to you with this problem. Come to me in my dream tonight and give me an answer." So essentially, you are praying to Saint Joseph for dream divination. And yes, that sounds very witchy and folk magical. You know who does that? The Pope. The Pope has a devotion to Sleeping Saint Joseph. Now, I cannot say that he does the specific prayer about dream divination, but he does write letters to the Sleeping Saint Joseph and puts the letter under the statue so he can get clarity on these issues. So even the Pope does folk Catholicism. Because while all of these things are practiced by Catholic people, there's not any, you know, doctrine or dogma or parameters for these things. Because there never has been. You can write your own prayers. You can write your own novenas. And the church has not put a pause on some of these cultural rituals because, which we will talk about, the church is a big tent and the church is made up of all of these rituals and cultural beliefs. So again, all of these are very folksy practices, and yet they are all done by people that just consider themselves Catholics. There's also a love of culture and an emphasis on culture when you say folk anything, but especially folk Catholicism. So what comes to mind is, you know, me coming, my grandparents are Italian immigrants, and, you know, my great grandmother and grandmother would pray the St. Michael prayer to cure the evil eye. Or, you know, you might come from a Mexican background where you had an abuela who would do the limpia while praying a Hail Mary. And those are folk Catholic practices too. But the nona and the abuela, would they consider themselves witches? Would they consider themselves folk Catholics? No. They just consider themselves Catholics, as would all of the other very folksy people and practices that we just discussed. And of course, I would be irresponsible if I were to say that the umbrella term of folk Catholicism doesn't include beliefs that the church does take issue with. They certainly do. So again, this academic term of folk Catholicism, since it's usually used in academia, it does include how cultures display Catholicism within syncretistic practices. So Haitian voodoo would also be considered folk Catholicism. Similarly, unauthorized folk saint veneration, Santa Muerte, would be a folk Catholic practice that the church has spoken about poorly. Granted, I will say though, that in some cultures, even though the institution says, you know, don't do this folk saint veneration, oftentimes, the bishops will turn a blind eye to not upset their congregations, who again, don't consider themselves folk Catholics, just consider themselves Catholics. So we talked about how it has been used since the late 70s, which pretty much has been an academic bubble. So how is it being used now? And again, the issue we have here is, historically, the term was never used by the average person to describe their own practice. It was largely just used in academia. And similarly, as I've laid out, it was never meant to describe a religious identity. Historically, the identity was just always Catholic, but the term was used, often by scholars, to describe the thing they were doing. Therefore, the scholar would never say, this person is a folk Catholic. The scholar would say, the thing they are doing is folk Catholic in an academic context. But today, people are calling themselves folk Catholic. So now it's not the thing that is folk Catholic, but the religious identity is folk Catholic, or the spiritual identity is folk Catholic. And I can certainly understand why. They are drawn to the elements of the Catholic faith, Mary, the saints, novenas, the rosary, but they are uncomfortable with the institution, so they don't want to identify with the institution, or they want to incorporate another element of spirituality into a Catholic identity. But now people will approach me and they'll say, how can I be folk Catholic? And I'm really not sure how to answer that question, because folk Catholicism is a cultural display of someone's own unique Catholicism, whether it's under the confines of the church or not. So to simply tell this person, go pray a rosary or go take up a novena, am I really telling them how to be folk Catholic? When I'm simply recommending two very basic tenets of traditional Catholicism? I don't think so. And I want to reiterate again, I think this movement is important. I think reclaiming one's own spiritual identity, especially the elements that have been lost by colonization, is beautiful, it's necessary, and it's important. I think creating your own expression of Catholicism outside of the church is very much needed. But I also want to say, and I'm not sure if this will be controversial, is that words and labels still matter, though? If something is folk Catholic, to me, at least in a labeling sense, it should still be a practice of the folks, right? It should still be a cultural practice, and it should be at least a little bit Catholic. And for it to be a little bit Catholic, I implore you to at least do the following. I'm not the boss of you. You can do whatever you want. And in no way am I pushing anything upon you. I want to say that over and over again, because this episode is going to get twisted in some way by someone. But I love you, and I'm not telling you what to do. I am proud of you for taking charge of your own spirituality in a religion that has been expressed to you as being very rigid. I'm not trying to tell you what to do. But I'm recommending, suggesting you do the following. While the church is responsible for immense evils, and the church does have issues with rigidity, before framing the entire teachings of the church as the enemy and proclaim that your practice will be completely devoid of any church involvement, take some time to actually research what the church does teach on that thing. Because quite often, someone sees themselves as doing something subversive and folk magical, and they're doing this ritual that's sticking it to the Vatican, when often what they're doing is done by even the most devout of Catholics. Is it novena folk candle spells, or is it just a novena? And does the church really restrict personal revelation and personal practice in the way you think it does? And before you say, oh, well, the church wouldn't want me doing this, or the church would think I'm a heretic or a sinner, or they wouldn't accept me for this, research and see if that's true before proclaiming that it is. I just think that that's responsible. And I know, me personally, I was actually surprised to find an openness within church teaching on how there are rays of truth and light in all religions, and how the good conscience of even atheists will make room for salvation. I also learned approved theology that makes room for universalism. And all my left-leaning, liberal, progressive views, they can be backed up by church teaching. I also learned that it's okay to disagree with tenets of doctrine, as long as it doesn't go against dogma, which in Catholicism is fairly straightforward. It's responsible to do research before you make claims about evil and about the institution. And the term Catholicism can mean many things to many different people. So if you're going to say folk Catholic, find out what that Catholic part means in your practice. And not only will this help you in your identity and filling that void that you might have to identify with a practice, this will also help you spiritually. If you learn the Catholic teachings on the saints and the celestial hierarchy, if you learn about Catholic angelology, it'll answer questions like, why can I do this to a saint? What is the nature of the saint? What is the nature of venerating this saint, so on and so forth? What's the history of novenas? By uncovering the history, by uncovering those teachings, even if it's surface level, it also opens up doors and opportunities to be more creative in your personal expression of your Catholicism, to be creative in your own folk Catholicism. So not only will help us define Catholicism, but also it will help our Catholicism make more sense. It will make our practice make more sense. And thus, we can add on to it. We can explore it even more deeply. So again, research at least some of the basic tenets of the things you're doing. I am a big proponent of not over-intellectualizing your practice. And yet I do still recommend at least doing some research, because it opens up more doors and it allows you to establish and express your spirituality more fully. Just a suggestion, not a demand, not an order. I am by no means an authority, but just a suggestion. And another thing that I am very kindly suggesting is take some time to define what is meant when you say the church, especially when you say the church is the enemy. The church is over 1.5 billion members, so naturally there will be a lot of diversity that you might be unaware of. And yet, the church is still just a sum of her parts, even though those parts will conflict. Unfortunately, in the United States, our U.S. Council of Bishops are very conservative. They tend to run things that, to me, mimic Protestant evangelical Puritan thinking, to the point where it has created a very toxic form of Catholicism here in the United States. Some of the trauma that you have experienced is likely due to that influence. However, if you go elsewhere, the Catholicism will look different. The conservative U.S. bishops who are absurdly withholding Eucharist from liberal politicians look quite different to the Belgian Catholic priests who are right now blessing same-sex couples. I will say that again, Belgian Catholic priests are blessing same-sex couples, and yet those liberal Belgians and those conservative Americans, they're both still part of the church. And as Western Catholics are foolishly speaking on the dangers of dressing up as monsters on Halloween, there are great church-sponsored parades in the East where children and adults alike are dressed up as ghosts and goblins and they're marching through the streets making way for All Souls Day, and yet both are members of the church. Past popes have disgustingly said that certain forms of sexuality are disordered, and yet the current pope, Pope Francis, says, "You are gay because God made you that way and God loves you more than you know." But the past popes and Pope Francis, they're still parts of the church. The great desert fathers who spent all of their spirituality never attending Mass, never getting the Eucharist, but instead just praying to God in caves, they're part of the church. But so is Saint Padre Pio, who spent his whole life at the altar in the confessional booth. He is the church too. The great Saint Thomas Aquinas, who taught us how to experience God with the mind, versus the great Saint Therese of Lisieux, who taught us that God can just be found in our heart through simple love, are they both not part of the same church? So when you say the church is evil, yes, yes, but who? Who? Your grandmother, whose folk Catholicism that you loved, is she evil? The monks and nuns who dedicate their lives to taking care of AIDS victims, are they evil? Is there evil? Oh my God, there is evil. Absolutely. But is it appropriate to throw out the baby with the bathwater altogether? And maybe it is for you, and that's fine. But we're especially in a time right now where we have a pope who supports Black Lives Matter, basic universal income, who is more worried about the world literally ending and people dying due to climate change than silly theological debates. Especially now we have a pope who started the Synod for Synodality, in which he invites discussions on the topic of ordination for women, blessing same-sex couples, and so on. And those conversations are being held right now. And I know I sound like a major church apologist right now. And that's okay. I will also admit, and this is very, very important, this is very important that I say this, I will also admit that just because the church should be sticking to the more open ideology of Vatican II and the loving liberal direction of Pope Francis, it doesn't mean that the clergy and the members are. Because they're not in many places. People are still getting abused. They're still being turned away. They are still becoming traumatized. But I also believe that the church is the sum of her parts. I also believe that if we are to fight hatred and closed-mindedness with hatred and closed-mindedness, we aren't going to get anywhere. So before we paint the church as an enemy, or before we jump to the conclusion that the church thinks such and such is a sin, all I'm asking is to spend some time and research it. And when we use terminology, let's be careful how we use it, because misinformation is harmful, even if it's against an institution that you don't care for. And there's plenty of ammo you can use. There's plenty of ammo I use when talking about the evils of the church. Just make sure you're using the right ones. And I also guess what I'm trying to say is, full Catholicism makes Catholicism. You cannot have Catholicism without the folk aspects. And as I've described, it is a big tent with different ideologies and different expressions of their own views. On my altar right now, I have the great Saint Benedict, who lived a cloistered life, a life of prayer, a life of rarely leaving the monastery. And next to him, I have the great Saint Francis, who was out with the people, who essentially was homeless, who essentially never lived in a monastery, but instead was always with the people. And those two saints still found God and knew God, but they expressed it differently. So true Catholicism is full Catholicism, and full Catholicism is just Catholicism. So whether you are choosing to get back into the sacraments, which I think are incredible, and I think there's so much magic and power there, or if you simply just want to find God at your altar with your rosary and your Marian statues, that's beautiful too. But do some research on what the church believes, on her diversity, on her teachings, on the church and who it really is. In doing so, this will enhance your understanding of certain spiritual aspects. It will deepen your practice. The writings of St. John of the Cross, the teachings of St. Teresa of Avila. It will deepen that mysticism, that theosis, that divinization that we so often seek. By putting in the effort to do that research, it may also help us heal. Might make those wounds a little more palatable. And ultimately, as cheesy as it sounds, it might help us love our neighbor a little more too. And remove the hatred, the division, and the scattering that is so wrongfully in our hearts. May help us remove that mentality of us versus them, so we can be with one another as siblings of God. I guess I also want to say that I know that this episode is going to get misconstrued a little bit, and that's okay. I'm expecting that, because this is an episode where I spent a good bit talking about, let's have an open mind on church teachings, or how we define the church. I know that. So I apologize if that made you uncomfortable. However, what I'm also trying to do is I am trying to present myself as well under that umbrella of the church. Me, who has a very progressive, liberal ideology, who gravitates to the magical and the mystical. I'm part of the church too. And I hope I'm not your enemy. I love you, and God bless you.